Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Billboard Charts.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm all right. Been watching a little Olympics in the past few days. How about you?
Not enough, honestly. I think I need to put it on a little bit more and have my kids watch it, you know?
Yeah, it's you know, every 4 years we get to learn about sports that you didn't really know enough about, and you get to meet a lot of amazing athletes through the television or whatever venue you get to watch it on. And yeah, super exciting. So I'm trying to find like a music related way to talk about the Olympics. Haven't found one yet so far.
I mean, I can tell you that Pink, you know, offered to pay for the like fines that the beach handball team from Norway got because of their uniforms not being skimpy enough, basically.
Apparently, like the thing is, there's a regulation uniform they have to wear, which is fairly skimpy.
The women have to wear bikini bottoms, and they were wearing shorts, and they got fined for that.
Well, what are the men's?
The men wear shorts. There's actually like a little graphic going around on Twitter
that
shows.
If the ladies have to wear bikinis, why can't the dudes wear a bunch of speedos?
There you go. Maybe that's what Pink should be paying for.
Yeah,
some bikini bottoms for the men.
Let's get the priorities straightened out. Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop and occasionally the Olympics on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news on how Pop Smoke's second posthumous album, Faith, debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 chart, while John Mayer's latest, Sob Rock, starts at number two. Plus, how BTS's Butter returns to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, displacing the group's own Permission to Dance from number one.
Also on the show, we'll be talking about Kanye West's new album, Donda, and its promise of a new Jay-Z collaboration. Also, we have Taylor Swift's decision to pull a number one album out of contention at the upcoming Grammys and CMA Awards, and Camila Cabello's new single and video for Don't Go Yet. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
All right, let's do the chart chat. First up, Pop Smoke's second posthumous album, Faith, debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 chart, garnering the late rapper his second leader. The Guest Laden Collection was released on July 16th, and starts with 88,000 equivalent album units earned in the U.S. in the week ending July 22nd, according to MRC data. The standard 20-track Faith album features more than 20 guest stars, including Chris Brown, Future, Dua Lipa, and Kanye West. A deluxe version of Faith with 4 bonus tracks was released on July 21st. Pop Smoke previously topped the Billboard 200 with Shoot for the Stars, Aim for the Moon, which debuted at number one on the list dated July 18th, 2020, and spent 2 non-consecutive weeks atop the chart. The set, which was billed as the rapper's first studio album, went on to be the number 3 most popular album of 2020, according to MRC data, and it also won the 2021 Billboard Music Award for Top Billboard 200 Album. And on the latest Billboard 200, by the way, the album actually jumps 11 to 9, with 28,000 units earned.
Yeah, his mom came and accepted the award on his behalf at the BMAs.
Right.
And it's just, man, the fact that this man is like doing so well commercially after he passed is just really upsetting because you wish he was here for it, basically.
I've wondered, and I don't mean this in a morbid way. It's just, you know, with artists who release material posthumously, I wonder how much they recorded before they passed. For someone like Tupac, he had many albums that he released after he died, hugely successful albums that went to number one. And I wonder, for someone like Pop Smoke, how much did he have sort of already recorded in a vault somewhere? Was he someone like Prince, where he just was always recording and always putting stuff down on tape? So it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, with his estate and with further music from him.
Yeah, yeah. And also with a rapper, like a producer can take a verse that might have been intended for another song and turn it into something new. There's a lot of possibilities. And I get the feeling, his second number one album, we are going to get as much material as possible from him. So.
Yeah. Well, next, friend of the pod and noted Katie favorite, John Mayer, notches his 10th top 10 album on the Billboard 200 as the singer-songwriter's latest studio release, Sob Rock, debuts at number 2 with 84,000 equivalent album units earned. The bulk of that actually was in album sales. It sold 61,000 copies and is also the top-selling album of the week. Katie.
Yes.
Have you had some extra time to spend with Sob Rock over the past week or so?
Yeah, I it's definitely been in regular rotation around the house. It's a great listen when you're feeding a baby breakfast.
I was going to say, how are the kids enjoying the Sob Rock?
Calvin actually recognized the song New Light, which has been out for 3 years and is included on the album.
It's technically the first single from this album.
But it's funny. It's like he was calling John Mayer out because I was like, oh, this is a new album by one of Mama's favorites. And then I put it on and he's like, I've heard this song before.
Like, Mama, that's an old song.
That's not new.
All right. Well, lastly, BTS's Butter rebounds to number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart. From number 7 last week, adding an 8th week in total atop the chart. Butter replaces BTS's own Permission to Dance, which launched at number 1 a week ago, succeeding Butter, which had spent the previous 7 weeks at number 1. And this week, Permission to Dance falls to number 7. Butter garnered 30.7 million radio airplay audience impressions, which was up 2%, and 8.8 million U.S. streams, down 21%, in the week ending July 22nd, according to MRC data. Despite its airplay gain, the track drops 20 to 21 on the radio songs chart, and on streaming songs, it falls 26 to 40. As Butter returns to number 1 on the Hot 100, of course jumping 7 to 1 as I already mentioned, it swaps spots with Permission to Dance, which falls 1 to 7. The flip-flopping on the chart is all about the sales picture here. Permission to Dance debuted at number 1 last week with 140,000 downloads sold via its original and instrumental digital versions, each on sale for 69 cents apiece following its July 9th release. And in its second week, the song fell by 39% to 85,000 downloads sold in the week ending July 22nd. And those sales come from those two digital versions, which I just mentioned, plus an alternative single cover option, which was released in the group's web store on the last day of the tracking week, and it was also priced for just 69 cents. Meanwhile, Butter returns to number 1 with a 132% sales gain, with 116,000 sold, up from 50,000 in the week previous. Butter tallies an 8th week atop the digital song sales chart, rising 2-1, supplanting Permission to Dance, which falls 1-2. Meanwhile, Permission to Dance falls 8-41 on the streaming songs chart and has yet to debut on the radio songs chart. Elsewhere on the Hot 100, Normani's Wild Side featuring Cardi B debuts at number 14. We talked about that song last week and what a big look it was for Normani. And a number of Pop Smoke's album cuts from his new album arrive on the Hot 100, including Demeanor featuring Dua Lipa at number 86. And 3 spots below that, Dua Lipa's own single Love Again debuts at number 89. It's the 5th song from the standard edition of her Future Nostalgia album to chart on the Hot 100, following Don't Start Now, Physical, Break My Heart, and, of course, Levitating.
You mentioned Wildside. Our colleague Rania Aniftos, she got to see the technical first performance of Wildside over the weekend.
What festival was that at?
It was not a festival.
Oh,
Normani
sorry.
Popped up at a Don Julio tequila party in Malibu.
As one does.
And she performed that and one other song at the party. So Rania got up close and personal for a little quick Normani performance.
Did Rania even know that she was going to be there?
We might have gotten a little heads up.
I was like, was Rania just going to a Don Julio party in Malibu?
I don't know how much I'm allowed to say. I'll just say, like, I got the invite and it touted an A-list performer who was about to release new music. And I'm like, I'm going to need to know more.
I see. It was one of those things where it's like, y'all should really be there, wink, wink.
Exactly. Yeah. And so when the rep told me Normani, I'm like, oh, yeah, like, let's be there, especially with the new song. So, yeah. So Rania went.
All right.
Also last week on Thursday at the intimate club known as Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta.
Sure.
Kanye West staged a Donda listening event where he previewed his forthcoming album Donda to a crowd that surprisingly included Kim Kardashian and his children. They are currently in the middle of a divorce after 6+ years of marriage, but obviously they're always going to be co-parents. So, you know, she might have just wanted to bring the kids and be supportive.
Yeah.
So at the event where tickets were sold for either $20 or $50, the crowd got to hear new music and collaborations with Roddy Ricch, Lil Durk, Pusha T, Pop Smoke, Lil Baby, and most noteworthy, most surprising, Jay-Z. So West closed the event with the Jay-Z collaboration, which announced a possible return of The Throne, the pair's superstar duo that released the Watch the Throne album in 2011. As Billboard.com noted in our recap of the listening event, hearing Jay tease a return of The Throne is a relief, quote unquote, especially after things seemed to go sour between the two after Ye went on his infamous rants during the St. Pablo tour.
Kanye ranting? Stop. I mean,
my heart was warmed at this reunion, and we actually don't know for a fact, but there were rumors that Jay-Z actually sent Kanye this verse, like, after he'd already done previous, more private listening sessions just last week.
I saw something on Twitter where allegedly Jay-Z recorded his verse that day.
Yeah. And so when I heard that tidbit, I'm like, well, no chance we're going to be hearing the Donda album anytime soon, because they have not mixed and mastered Jay-Z's verse into this new song yet. Like, no way.
Because the album was supposed to come out on Friday, right?
Yeah.
Was it ever officially announced? I think it sort of
yes.
was.
No, it yeah. was. Actually, last week, I'm not sure if you saw that Beats by Dre commercial that Kanye did the music for, but it was starring, I don't know how to say her name, Sha'Carri. Yeah, so yes. Sha'Carri Richardson starred in this Beats by Dre ad that Kanye did the music for, and I think he, like, actually edited the commercial, too. And it said, in the ad, Donda on Friday. Like, that was the first place that we saw that it was confirmed that it was going to be Friday, and until it wasn't Friday. Because right. as we reported today on Billboard.com, the new release date, according to Kanye's reps, is August 6th. So, yeah.
Well, maybe it's good that you aren't getting in the mix with Billie Eilish this Friday, because her new album drops on Friday.
That is very fair. And so, you know, the Donda album, which is Kanye's 10th album, and it's named after his late mother who died in 2007, it could arrive any minute, really, because who knows? Kanye says August 6th, but maybe it'll actually be earlier. Who knows? But the promise of a Kanye and Jay-Z collaboration is just super exciting, at least to me. I love that. I love that combo.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, when I was sort of researching this, I was reminded of just how long Kanye and Jay's history is. You
yeah.
know, it dates back to, like, basically 2000, I guess.
It predates Kanye's artist career.
Yes. I mean, when Kanye was a producer, when Kanye was producing for artists on Jay-Z's Rockefeller Records roster, including Jay himself, and like Izzo Hova was a Kanye West production, and
yeah.
You know, it was a huge hit for Jay. And then, you know, they, of course, you know, Kanye and Jay-Z worked together as artists, you know, they were billed together on tracks together, in addition to their production work and being friends and so forth. But, you know, just as a recap, the pair have actually had 11 Billboard Hot 100 hits together as artists, including 3 top 10s. And West also produced 3 top 10s for Jay that West did not appear on as an artist himself, including, like I said, Izzo, and 03 Bonnie and Clyde with Beyonce. And, of course, there's that Watch the Throne album that Katie mentioned, which debuted at number 1 on the Billboard 200 in 2011. And also, I was going through all the different Grammys that Kanye has won, and there are many that came from his collaborations with Jay-Z. So while it has been a sort of long, sort of in terms of time span, working relationship, it's been a minute since they've done anything together. But every time they do get together, it's always a big moment. So this could be something really big.
Yes, totally. It's always impactful. And as we said, the album itself is not out. Nothing's been released to streaming services, including this Jay-Z song. In my mind, they should be working to release that very quickly. Like, it seems to me like get that one out to people ahead of the album. Who knows if that'll happen? And again, Kanye's got his own timetable. So we'll see. But, you know, even the people who were in the building said that the audio was, you know, a little difficult to consume, you know, for the project. And so it's almost as if no one has truly heard this song or this project yet, and really won't until, you know, the official version hits streaming services. So, yeah, so wait and stay tuned to Billboard.com, and we'll keep you updated on when that will be. And we will be eagerly waiting it along with you. And last week on the show, we were talking about veteran acts who could factor into this upcoming Grammy Awards. And this week we got some news about someone who's just completely up and removed themselves from contention. Taylor Swift, she pulled her Fearless Taylor's Version, which was her 2021 re-recorded album of her 2008 studio project Fearless, from both Grammy and CMA Awards contention. That's Country Music Association Awards. And earlier this year, Fearless Taylor's Version debuted at number one on both the Billboard 200 and Top Country Albums charts. And I know that our awards editor has been writing articles like, you know, is it eligible for these awards? And we determined with the Recording Academy previously, yes, it would have been eligible, even though it won, you know, Album of the Year at the Grammys back in 2009, I suppose. Yes. Maybe
it did. Well, it did win Album of the Year.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to say the specific year. Yeah. But it won Album of the Year. So it was kind of a weird thing. Like, could Taylor win Album of the Year twice for the same album? Well, Taylor's decided no, she can't do that. A representative for Taylor's record label, Republic Records, said in a statement to Billboard, after careful consideration, Taylor Swift will not be submitting Fearless Taylor's Version in any category at this year's upcoming Grammy and CMA Awards. Fearless has already won 4 Grammys, including Album of the Year, as well as the CMA Award for Album of the Year in 2009 and 2010, and remains the most awarded country album of all time. Swift will be submitting her 9th studio album, however, Evermore, to the Grammys for consideration in all categories. Earlier this year, Swift took home the Album of the Year trophy for Folklore, so it feels like Evermore has a really, you know, clear path to be nominated again this year. And that's kind of, in my mind, Keith, tell me if you disagree, but to me it's like this decision was made because Fearless has had its moment and Evermore hasn't, and this will take away any confusion of like how to honor Taylor Swift in the year, you know, 2020 into 2021.
Yeah, it does resolve the possible confusion with an artist who is very prolific, with one of those projects that was released, a very kind of complicated project, meaning the Fearless re-record. So she just sort of said, look, I'm going to solve this problem for you. I do think, though, the question I have about artists choosing to just exclude themselves from the running, why? Like, I think if an artist can just choose to remove an album or single or video or whatever it is from contention, doesn't that kind of
sully the process?
Yeah, it kind of neutralizes the whole idea, where if this is allegedly the music industry recognizing the best recorded music of the year, everything should be on the table, much like in theory, you know, the way the Billboard charts, just like, well, yes, it's a re-record, but it's a whole new album, and therefore,
right.
So, but at the same time, you also want to honor the artist's intention, and you don't want to go against their wishes, and
also these award shows, while, you know, the artist doesn't dictate what happens, you know, would angering Taylor be worth it to the award show that also would like her to attend and perform, etc., etc.? Like, you don't want to offend her either, but it does make me think of in previous years when we've heard about artists submitting themselves in specific categories or genres, right, and the Recording Academy making the executive decision. Sorry, I know you think that this should have been in, you know, R&B, but we moved it to pop. Or I know you thought this should have been pop, we moved it to whatever. And they sort of disregard the artist's wishes in that regard, when they could just be like, okay, whatever the artist wants. But it's interesting that they wouldn't consider overriding what the artist wants in just terms of submitting, period. Because, you know, we haven't mentioned this yet, but, you know, Drake and Frank Ocean have previously taken themselves out of consideration. And right. Those were huge projects. I mean, Frank Ocean, I think especially, was somebody who 100% would have been honored if he had been submitted. And it's weird that there might be an asterisk next to that year where he should have, could have been nominated or won just because he decided not to be. So
who was the artist that was just this year? Hasn't The Weeknd basically said that he's just like, I'm not going to participate anymore?
He's done for the future. Yeah. He obviously submitted to this last one, but
and yet
done
Save
now.
Your Tears is one of the biggest records of the year. So Ariana Grande, who did a remix with him for Save Your Tears, like she and him both. I mean, it just seems, I don't know.
And who knows what the next, you know, decade holds. The Weeknd is guaranteed to put out something, you know, as big as, you know, Blinding Lights or something bigger. Obviously, the Grammys didn't think Blinding Lights was, you know, worth nominating, but something, you know, to that level that should be. I mean, maybe we should ask Paul this question, because has the Recording Academy directly been asked, will you, just because an artist says that they're taking themselves out, does that mean you really take them out of the conversation? You know?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a great question.
It is a great question.
We don't have the answer right now.
That we just asked.
I guess we can move on.
Let's move on. So finally, friend of the podcast, Camila Cabello, dropped her new single, Don't Go Yet, last week, alongside a colorful and wacky music video that blends together over-the-top 80s-inspired fashions and Miami Vice and telenovelas and just all these sort of vibes together. A lot of colors, a lot of over-the-top acting, a lot of great hair.
Just hair.
The Latin flavored track is Cabello's first new music since the release of her December 2019 album Romance, and Don't Go Yet is the lead single from Cabello's upcoming third solo album Familia. On Twitter, she wrote that Familia was inspired by two things, quote unquote, family and food. Your family by blood, but also your chosen family, who you want to sit with at the dinner table, get wine drunk, and dance in the living room with.
I like that idea.
I have to say, like, this song really surprised me. Video is super fun and great, but I was sort of listening to the song and was like, oh, yeah, this is pleasant. And then it gets to that little bit where she's like, it's kind of a little breakdown right after the first chorus. And I'm mm-hmm. like, ooh, this is sassy. Like, it's a really fun song.
I think it's really interesting. I think it's like a surprising track where it's like sonically really interesting.
Yeah, I also think, like, Camila, she had such a big breakthrough on the solo side with Havana, which was a number one. And, you know, I think it worked because it fit her so well. This kind of, like, hip-hop with the Cuban flavor as a Cuban-American artist. And to me, this this new song, it's very much, like, embracing, like, oh, by the way, did you forget for a second that, like, I'm Cuban-American? Because, like, here it all is. Like, this is what I grew up with. Here's all the sounds. It's straight up Miami Sound Machine. I mean, it's the Estefans. Like, it's super fun, but also modern. And I think she killed it. So, yeah.
Well, now it's time for the chart stat of the week.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. Lately,
40 years ago this week, well before Camila was ever born, Rick Springfield's Jessie's Girl hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100, becoming the singer-songwriter and actor's first and so far only number one. The track rose 3-1 on the chart dated August 1st, 1981, and spent two consecutive weeks atop the list. Do you know what else happened the week of August 1st, 1981?
The literal day, August 1st,
yeah.
MTV started.
The day MTV debuted.
40-year anniversary this weekend.
Well, at the time, Springfield was a red-hot star on the ABC TV daytime soap opera General Hospital as Dr. Noah Drake. While Springfield had been on the Hot 100 four times before Jesse's Girl, going all the way back to 1972's Speak to the Sky, it was his role on General Hospital and Jesse's Girl that turned Springfield into a superstar. To put General Hospital's impact in perspective, at the time, the show was watched by 11 million viewers each weekday in 1981, according to Nielsen, and it was the highest-rated soap opera that year.
How were there 11 million people not working during the soap opera? Because this was pre-TiVo, you guys.
Well, think of it. Back then, in 1981, there were like basically three networks, no YouTube, no internet, no video games. And if you were maybe a high school student or a college kid that came home during the middle of the day, maybe you were
a housewife.
And
it was more traditional. Yes, it was more traditional to have people be a homemaker, a woman be a homemaker. Yes.
You had limited options for what to watch for entertainment during the day. And it was destination television. All the soap operas were.
Yeah.
So anyway, Jesse's Girl was Springfield's debut hit for RCA Records, and the single arrived on the Hot 100 in March of 1981, the same month that Springfield debuted on General Hospital. What a coincidence. While he left the show in 1983, Springfield continued to act and sing, notching a total of 21 Hot 100 hits. Springfield even returned to General Hospital twice after his initial run, and he returned in 2005 through 2008, and then again in 2012 and 2013. And at one point, Springfield, as Dr. Noah Drake, or Dr. Noah Drake as Springfield, or Springfield when he was playing Dr. Noah Drake, arranged to have the famous singer named Rick Springfield sing at a benefit concert in the show. Because,
was
you know, soap operas.
Was he his evil twin?
No, but apparently he did, when I was researching this, he did play some other character, which might have been an evil villain type person.
I love soap operas. That's incredible.
I just love the fact that Dr. Noah Drake somehow arranged to have Rick Springfield show up.
Close friend,
and it was
Rick
apparently
Springfield.
The first time that Rick Springfield ever sang on General Hospital, too. And
wow.
The first thing he sang was Jesse's Girl
that is so
decades
fun.
Later. So anyway, so here you have it. 40 years ago this week, Rick Springfield took Jesse's Girl to number one on the Hot 100. You know I wish that I had Jesse's Girl.
I wish that I had Jesse's Girl. Amazing.
We've reached the end of our show. Katie, any parting words?
Oh, man. I guess not.
Okay. Well,
that
what
was
song
a fun
should we
show,
go
so I like him out of words. What's up? You know what? I'm not super familiar with non-Jesse's Girl Rick Springfield. Do you have a recommendation for a song we could go out on?
We could do another big hit of his called Don't Talk to Strangers.
Perfect.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.